It's holiday season, as we said. Most of us, it means some time away from work, away from school, getting to do some more enjoyable things. We've got time on our hands. I noted the last couple days, though, I'm running behind on my nap time, not getting the sleep that I wanted to get. And Mom told a story, even, in the last couple days of many years ago when I was a baby, and we were at a gospel meeting in Frederick, Oklahoma, I believe it was, that they knew this particular preacher was going to preach for a while. So they brought a blanket, put on the floor under the pews, put Nolan down there to sleep. Have you ever seen that and noticed that children can sleep in some strange positions and odd circumstances? You may see them in the middle of a busy mall, the height of shopping season, and they're just passed out, going from store to store. Or maybe at a football stadium with 100,000 people yelling their heads off, you'll see a little kid over dad's shoulder or cuddled by mom, and that child asleep. We're going to talk this morning, as we said, about faith, wrapped around a story of a man who finds rest. As you can see, if you want to be turning to Luke chapter 8, we're going to read some verses out of that chapter in just a moment. Title of the lesson, Where is Your Faith? What we're going to find is a man who found rest when others found only fear. That man, of course, is Jesus. Whereas others tossed, he was calm and radiated peace. So we want to examine him in the midst of adversity and try to find some lessons that we can take and use in our lives. This story about Jesus calming the seas is recorded also in Matthew chapter 8 and Mark chapter 4, but I've chosen to read Luke's version in Luke chapter 8, starting at verse 22. Now it came to pass on a certain day that he went into a ship with his disciples. And he said unto them, Let us go over into the other side of the lake. And they launched forth. But as they sailed, he fell asleep. And there came down a storm of wind on the lake, and they were filled with water. Do you get this picture? The boat is filled with water, the ship. And they were in jeopardy. And they came to him and awoke him, saying, Master, Master, we perish. Then he arose, and he rebukes the wind and the raging of the water, and they ceased, and there's a calm. And having done that, Jesus turns his attention now back to the disciples, and he says to them, Where is your faith? Where is your faith? Because in the parallel account in Mark chapter 4, Mark recorded this, How is it that you, an emphatic you, have no faith? Many others in the world, I might not expect it, but out of the disciples, his believers, his followers, where is your faith? How is it you have no faith on this occasion? They, being afraid, wondered, saying one to another, What manner of man is this? For he commandeth even the winds and water, and they obey him. And so to recap this short story we've read, it's late in the evening. Jesus enters a boat with his disciples to cross the Sea of Galilee for some respite from the crowds, to get away for a short time. And wearied, he lies down on a pillow to sleep. But the storm strikes, apparently pretty suddenly, very fierce in its nature by the descriptions given in these gospel accounts. But this isn't like Nolan out in a ship not knowing what to do. These are seasoned fishermen. They make their living in a ship in these boats out on the water. They faced certainly storms or trouble before. These seasoned fishermen thought they were going to die due to the fury of this particular storm because the wind and the waves are pouring water into the boat and the boat is filled with water. And you can imagine now these men fighting the storm. We're going to find oars and try to row and get closer to land, you know, get away from this storm, whatever direction we could go. We could imagine them searching, finding buckets or a hat or whatever you could to scoop this water and empty the boat out. Maybe ropes to tie things down or tie themselves to the boat, as they often did, so that someone wouldn't be washed out to sea. They're searching for all these things, but you know what they couldn't find? They couldn't find their faith. And that's why we want to talk about this story and these lessons this morning. They're amazed at Jesus sleeping here, right? Master, don't you care? Well, he speaks, and the storm is instantly abated. And then his response, where is your faith? Evidently, it had been washed overboard. Early believers who followed Jesus lived lives that many times, I would suggest, led into storms, persecutions, and uncertainties and trials pounded their faith. Imagine what it would have been like when Jesus came, all the troubles that he faced, and now you're to take on that faith and say, yes, I believe in this guy, what he teaches, that he's the Son of God, he's going to die on a cross for our sins, all those things, to stand up and proclaim that. What you would have faced in your life to have said, yes, I'm one of his. How to survive in the midst of those kinds of storms is what we want to look at this morning. And I suggest to you, we need to open our eyes. There's some things that we must realize. First of all, that adversity can strike even faithful believers. The storms of life, adversity, it's not always going to be a bed of roses and everything's just hunky-dory. The disciples faced a storm in our story here because they obeyed Jesus. What did we read? He said, let us go. Parallel account in Matthew 8 says that he entered a ship, the disciples followed him. Well, simple logic. If they had not gotten onto the ship and gone out into the midst of the sea, they had remained on shore, wouldn't have had to worry about the storm, would they? But because of following Jesus, getting on that ship with him and pushing off, they end up being in the storm. You know what Satan says to us on these kinds of times? Satan will say it's because of your sin. You did something bad is why something bad now is happening to you in your life. Really? Who are we going to listen to? Really, Satan, is that how it is? He gives us a distorted view of ourselves. You may remember other stories that are found in the New Testament. A time in John chapter 9 when Jesus traveling with his disciples, they come across a man who was blind. And what was the question of the disciples to Jesus? Master, who sinned? Who did something wrong that this guy is blind? Why is he in this shape? Somebody did something real bad wrong. No. There was a purpose Jesus brings out. And he's going to get to work a miracle. And it's going to lead many others to belief, to faith in God. Not questioning God. In the book of Job, you remember the terrible things that happened to Job and his wife, losing all the possessions and losing their children. And Job's friends come to sit with him, right, to comfort him. I would suggest they did so the first week when they sat there in silence. But then they opened their mouths. And their thinking is summarized, I would say, in chapter 4, verse 7, when his friend Eliphaz says, whoever perished being innocent? What was their point? Job, all this bad stuff happened. You need to look closer. There's something you're not telling us. Something you've done, you said, some way you've acted, that all this bad stuff has been brought on you. That's Satan and his thinking. But you see, the thinking in the world is that Satan tries to sell on us is that God doesn't let good people suffer. To which I reply, baloney. Ecclesiastes 9 verse 11, the wisest man who ever lived wrote, time and chance happeneth to all. we line up two guys in a race. Well, this one's an Olympic champion. This one's, you know, just Nolan, old and bad knees and slow to start with. He says the race doesn't always go to the fastest guy. Time and chance happens. One may pull up lame. One may get hit by a car or who knows what. Time and chance happens in this life. And we need to understand that. That following the Lord doesn't exempt us from storms. Rather, at times it will lead us into storms. That comes with being a disciple of Jesus. Adversity can strike us also. Surely, as we live enough years on this earth, we come to make some observations, right? And we come to observe that there is normal suffering that comes just living in a mortal world, that we're not going to live forever. That as I get old, things are going to start slowing down and falling apart and quit working. There's the normal suffering that comes living in a mortal world, but there's also the trials of living moral, M-O-R-A-L, living a moral life in a corrupt world. There will be sufferings that we will face. By standing up for Jesus, by controlling our tongues as we talked about this morning, controlling how we live, following God, following His Word, is going to lead into some of the storms of life. In the parallel account of this, in Mark chapter 4, verse 36, the simple notation is made, as Jesus and His disciples got into a ship, there were other ships there also. Well, guess what? As many ships, whether that was 3 or 10 or 50, however many ships went out into the sea that night, how many of them faced the storm? Was it just the one Jesus and His disciples were on? It would have been every ship that was out on the waters on the Sea of Galilee that night. They all would have been hit by the storm. That's part of life. There are good things that happen from day to day with circumstances. There are bad things that happen from day to day with circumstances. All of those ships would have faced the same storm. And times of adversity are times for faith, not despair. Number 2, adversity is something that also tends to make us selfish, doesn't it? This storm hits there. And what's the disciples' first thought in their words? Master, don't you care that we perish? It's not to say the lives of Peter and John and Andrew and these guys weren't important. God values every soul, every life. But if you consider the cargo that was on that ship that night, wasn't the anointed one of God the Christ? The one that they're going to call rightfully Master, he's on that ship down in the hold asleep on the pillow. And yet when adversity hits, the first thing is, what about me? You don't care about me or us or what's happening here. Rather than focusing on the Christ who, if things kept going like they were, the Christ would die from a ship being filled with water and sinking. That wasn't according to prophecy or the plan of God. But see, storms expose our self-focus, don't they? And so many times when things begin to go wrong, it's might makes right, every man for himself. Forget you, forget her, forget. I'm going to take care of me. I'm going to survive, do what I have to survive. Adversity drives us to that so many times. We're very selfish when things aren't going well. But what does the Savior exhibit? How does Jesus react? He exhibits peace in the storm by caring for others. Storm bothering you, that's the problem. He speaks, and the winds are calm. We see it other times in His life and might think just in that short period of time that He hung on a cross immediately before His death. Would you agree that's a pretty adverse situation or circumstance to be in. Having been wrongfully tried and found guilty, though you've done nothing wrong. Having been mocked by the soldiers. Having been beaten as many times as the Jews would allow. And now being taken out by the Roman soldiers and hung, nailed literally to a cross, suspended between heaven and earth. Pretty adverse situation. You remember Jesus' words and his statements and his thoughts hanging on the cross? Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. The very ones that are killing me, Father, forgive them, he's praying for. As he hangs there, he looks down and sees his mother among a group of women that are there. And Jesus' statement to John is what? Behold thy mother. Take care of her. I'm about to be gone. And even to one of the ones that hangs on a cross next to him, what was Jesus' thought? Today, you will be with me in paradise. In the midst of adversity, Jesus exhibits this peace, this calmness, but he's not looking inwardly, selfishly. He's thinking about others, pronouncing blessings, seeing that one is taken care of. And the ultimate statement, asking that God would forgive them of the sin, that they might be saved, even though they've taken the very Son of God, crucified the Christ, the Anointed One. God can use you, he can use me, as a prism of light, a prism of grace in the midst of darkness when adversity hits. We had a number of verses this morning in class remind us to stop and think. Get a grasp of the big picture. Know everything instead of just popping off. And if we'll do that, God can use us in a positive manner. A prism of grace to show that and reflect that in the world. Even though the circumstances around us may be dim, we may think this could be the end. It's a time for faith, not selfishness. May I suggest one other thing based on this story about adversity? Hopefully, adversity drives us to trust in the Lord. Not to doubt Him and be driven or drift away from Him, as so many do. But the adversity will drive us to trust more fully in Him. Again, adversity is a thing that may distort our view of God. You ever heard someone say, God, He just doesn't care about us? He doesn't care about me and what happens in my life. Look at the circumstances I'm in. He's just left me here all alone without any help. I'm here in this storm of life. I bet you've heard someone talk along those lines. Someone has noted, and I got the very idea for this lesson out of a bulletin article. It was written by a fellow in the Dallas area some, I guess, 10, 11 years ago now. But someone has noted that if you read all the scriptures, all the gospel accounts recording the life of Jesus, this story is the only time recorded about Jesus sleeping. Well, what a strange time for it. Why wasn't Jesus up and about giving orders how to, you know, tie down the ship or throw this stuff overboard or change course or whatever needed to be done in order to secure the ship and ride out the storm and everybody's going to make it? Jesus is asleep on the pillow there. And it's been suggested, perhaps the reason is, the passage doesn't bear this out, but perhaps it was so the disciples would see their total dependence on Jesus. That the things they trusted in were not working. He said, if all 12 of us row our mightiest, we're not getting back to shore. We're scooping buckets fast as we can, we're still filling up and sinking. Whatever was in their knowledge and their know-how and their skills and talents wasn't working. They needed to come to a point of total dependence upon Jesus. And trials of life often do that to us, don't they? They will expose those unworthy objects of our faith as mere illusions. What are some of the things that we trust in from day to day? We've got a job. Oh, times are hard. Aren't we blessed because we've got a job? I'm still working. I'm not saying that's not a positive thing. Is that what I should put my trust in? That job's going to save me, come what may? I got my health. Oh, there's a lot of people hurting, suffering, ill. I'm still up and about, and I can, you know, lift 50 pounds and run down the street, whatever it is. I've got my health. That's going to take care of me. We've got a military might. Whoa, we start looking bigger scale. What's going to happen to our country? A lot of unsettling things going on in the world. We've got a pretty strong military. We can depend on that. How about I've got savings or good investments that I've done through the years, and that account sitting over here nobody knows about, but quietly it's growing and growing and growing? Are those the things that are going to take care of us? Not eternally, are they? Those things are just things. They're just that. They may be good today until they fail and they prove unreliable. It's then that we must come to learn or understand that we turn to the one who's unmoved as the world quakes and shakes and the storms hit. Then it may look like the end. You see, on this stormy night in this ship with the boat filling with water, the disciples came to know their Lord more clearly than in the peaceful morning before or after. It was in the storm they discovered that He's totally trustworthy. That in adversity, this was a time for faith, not doubt. And again, so many times, that's our immediate first reaction. Things go wrong. Why did God do that? Why has He let that happen to me? And we begin to drift away from God with doubt and fear, rather than turning to Him in total dependence that He is the only one who is steadfast and sure. He'll be there after the money's gone, after my health fails, after if I don't have a job, all these things that can go away. Peter writes, one day we'll dissolve in an instant in a flame of heat. Then what are we left with? It's a time for faith, not a time for doubt. So thank you for considering this story with me again this morning. Simple story, Jesus in a boat with His disciples. How many times you heard that or sung songs about it as a child? And we sang several songs that referenced it also this morning. What I want us to think about is, how do we survive storms of life? What should we do in times of adversity? Well, hopefully we've picked up on these things from the few scriptures we've referenced. First of all, find your faith and go find Jesus. Don't let those immediate right out of my mouth doubts and where's God and He forgot and He didn't care about us and what's happening. Go find God and find Jesus. Where are we going to find Him? In the scriptures, in His revealed will, in nature that speaks to His might and power. But we need to look for Him, not drift away from Him. Times of adversity and storms is a time for faith, not for panic, because God has the answers. Wednesday night a week ago, we talked about God provides for His plans to work. Many times we don't understand it, we don't see it, we don't know where this is headed. It seems like there's something missing here that's going to fail. God provides. Find rest and peace. Couple of passages in closing here. First one in John chapter 15. John chapter 15. Jesus speaks to this idea of adversity and storms of life and things not going well. John 15. Should be 16. Pardon me. Chapter 16, verse 33. Jesus speaking, "These things I've spoken to you, that in me you might have peace. In the world you shall have tribulation." There will be adversity. There will be storms. There will be days things don't go your way. in the world, in that realm, you'll have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. Are we looking for Jesus or looking for an excuse to get away from Him? And then I ask you, do you need more faith than you have this morning? If you had a chart, 1 to 10, 1 to 100, you were to graph, how much faith do I have? And somebody give you, color pencil, how much faith do you have? How far up the chart would you be colored? 32%, 50%? Would any of you say, I'm 100%, got that maxed out? If you need more faith, I want to suggest to you in closing this morning that faith is a choice. Do you hear me? Do you understand? Faith is a choice. You mean it's not just something I'm going to be driving down the road someday, just mind blank or listening to my favorite song, and wham, I'm going to be hit with it to just believe in God and Jesus and all the Scripture and everything that He wants me to do? That's not how it works. Look at these verses in Matthew chapter 11. You remember who John the Baptist was, right? The guy sent to be the forerunner, to prepare the way of the Lord for the coming of Jesus. But he didn't get to live day in and day out right there with Jesus and spend all this time with Him. Matthew chapter 11, verse 2. You remember this? When John had heard in prison the works of Christ, he sends two of his disciples and he sends them with this question. John has a question for Jesus. John, the one who's come and been preaching, he's the one to come. Remember, I'm not worthy to bend down and untie a shoe and all that. But John has a question. Are you He that should come, or do we look for another? This is a question of faith, isn't it? John needs to know for sure. I've been preaching, teaching, all that. Is it You? Are You the guy? Did Jesus just send them, right off peace? Yes, send this back. That's not how He answered, was it? How did Jesus answer verse 4? You go and show John again those things which you hear and see. What are you going to tell John? Blind people are receiving their sight. Lame people are getting up off their beds and walking. Lepers are cleansed of that dreadful, life-threatening disease. Deaf people can now hear. Even dead people are raised up from the dead and are alive again, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. How did Jesus answer the question? Are you the one that we're seeking for, that all these prophecies have been foretelling of? He says it's your choice. The facts haven't changed, even if the circumstances have. John, you're now in prison. They may take your life for what you've been doing. Is that a time for doubt, for fear, for withdrawal, for selfishness? Look at me. No, he's still asking, looking for faith. Jesus, just consider again, the evidences are out there. Look at it again, John, if you need to. People are being healed. People are raised from the dead. Gospel being preached to the poor. All these things. It's your choice, John. As it is my choice and your choice this morning, if we need more faith, we just need to look back at the evidence and consider it again. And we're going to make a choice whether or not I'm going to believe that Jesus is the Son of God, whether or not I believe every word that He says is true and is something that I need to obey and I need to do it, or I'll choose not to. And you'll choose the same, yes or no. Because we all have that evidence laid out for us. In the midst of a storm, do you still believe? And I would close with this question. Who better to pilot your ship through life's tempestuous seas than the Jesus, the anointed one, the Christ, the one who I believe is the Son of God. And Paul would write in Romans chapter 1, by his resurrection of the dead is shown forever to be the Son of God. Is that what you believe this morning? Are you able to find your faith when things aren't going well? It's easy on Sunday morning, as we talked about, when we're all together and you're around other people who love God. It's kind of easy to find faith in this auditorium, isn't it? What's it like on Tuesday when you're at work in the midst of an office full or room full of people who are not Christians? Or whatever circumstance life may lead you into. Maybe loss of some possessions and things that you love dearly. Might be loss of some loved ones. There's some tough things that happen in life. Where is your faith? Can you still find it? Can you still find your way to God? The invitation is extended this morning. We're going to sing this song, I Believe in Jesus. And I hope that you're able to sing this song wholeheartedly. Not just the words. Not just to go along with the crowd of 70, 80 other people. But that is the belief in your heart. And that's the one whom you turn to, whatever happens in life. But if you're not in a good condition, then you need to come find God again. If there's some way we can help you to come become a child of His, you're ready to start following Him. Or if you once lived that way, but your ship has gone astray and you want to come back, and we can help you in some way, would you come as we stand and sing?